this is Joan Michelson from Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. You can find us on the web at greenconnectionsradio.com. Like us on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Joan Michelson. I'm at Earth Day 2013 at Union Station in Washington, D.C., celebrating Earth Month on Earth Day specifically. And I'm here with Lynn Cherry, the author of 30 children's books on climate change and helping kids understand their role in protecting the environment. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, Lynn.
Glad to be here.
Tell me, first of all, how did you get into this work? You've been doing this for a very long time, well before it was, as they say, fashionable. Tell me how you happened to get into starting to write children's books about the environment.
I was actually writing books since the time I was 8. And I was writing about nature, about being out in nature and the animals that I observed and my woods. And then I came home from school one day and my woods was being bulldozed. So that's sort of what was the catalyst for my really caring about the earth and questioning the adult world and the way they operated.
Personal experience always moves us, doesn't it? And how did you move into, you were telling me earlier now that you're doing movies. How did you evolve from writing books into doing the movies called Young Voices for the Planet?
Well, all my books, when the way I would decide on what book I was going to write next, it depended on what needed to be done in the world. So I'd ask myself, what needs to be done? And then what can kids do to make a difference? And so that was how I decided to write a book. So then eventually I wrote a book on climate change, which about 6 years ago with Gary Brosh. And Gary had done a website called Worldview of Global Warming. And he went all around the world looking at evidence of climate change. And I realized climate change was the biggest issue of our time. And so we realized that if we told people just about gloom and doom and just barrage them with the scientific information, that we would get them all depressed and they would turn off. And the way to empower people was to tell them success stories. So kids, when I was doing the books, kids would come up to me and tell me how they were changing the world. And these were wonderful, inspirational stories that I've been sharing with people for 25 years. So I decided to take the same approach with climate change and start telling these stories about kids who are reducing CO2 emissions. And so I now have 9 movies, Young Voices for the Planet, and each one of them is a separate story about a kid or group of kids who are significantly reducing CO2 emissions, and the projects that they're doing are replicable, which means that anyone else could do them, and in fact, we wonder why isn't everybody doing them? So for instance, there are 4 girls from Florida who did an energy audit of their school, and they saved their school $53,000 in energy costs. There's an 11-year-old boy from Germany who started a website to plant trees. It went viral. He's now up to 3 billion trees that he's planted through his website. There's some students in Santa Monica, California, who saw the connection between fossil fuel and plastic bags and marine life. And so they got a ban on plastic bags in Santa Monica. So there are these kinds of stories where anyone could be doing these things in their community, so why not?
How did you find these kids?
The kids, initially I was talking to someone at Earth Island Institute, and they have a Brower Youth Award, and Alec Lors had applied for a Brower Youth Award when he was 12, but he was too young to get it. So I just happened to call them after he had applied, and they said, well, why don't you interview Alec? And he was great. He had a group called Kids Versus Global Warming. And then Alec was very well connected, and he knew his Team Marine, he knew Green Ambassadors, and then I knew of this other group, Girl Scouts in San Francisco, so I got funding and hired a crew, and we went to California, and we shot for 10 days, and we made 5 films from that first filming. And then ever since the films have been up on the internet, and they've been shown, like they were shown at the American Museum of Natural History, and, you know, that people see them, and then I get letters and emails about other kids who I should feature. And now I just wish I had enough time and energy and funding to do movies of all the kids who deserve to have films made of them.
Sounds like you need partners and to ramp up your organization. I noticed that you have, in your fan letters, you have one from Dr. Seuss and one from Al Gore. There's got to be a story in there. How did those come about?
Al Gore, I was at the Birchmere, it's just a folk music place in Virginia, and this is before Al Gore announced his run for the vice presidency, a long time ago. And I went up to him and said, you know, my publisher sent you a copy of my book, The Great Kapok Tree. Did you, you know, I didn't get a letter back from you. Did you get it? And he said, The Great Kapok Tree? That's my son's favorite book. And he had Tipper with him, and he dragged me over to Tipper and said, Tipper, this is the author of The Great Kapok Tree. So he wrote me a note after that, thanking me for the book and saying how much his kids liked it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. I love that story. How have the kids changed? You've been doing these books now for 30 years and the films. You've seen some changes, I'm sure. How have kids changed as they've evolved through this prism, this unique prism that you have to look at children's behavior?
Yeah, kids are more sophisticated these days than they were 30 years ago. They grow up faster. I think because they see so much of the problems on TV, but I think it's getting through to them that kids have power and kids can make a difference. And once kids know how much power they have to make change, they start acting. And there's no stopping them. And I think that's when you see these movies, the Young Voices for the Planet movies, I think that anyone seeing them, whether it's an adult or kids, they're incredibly inspired and empowered by them. You know, parents might look at them and say, oh, gee, I'm falling down on the job. I'm putting all this on the shoulders of the kids. Is that fair? The kids just say, if the adults aren't going to take the reins, then we're going to do it because this is our future. And that makes grown men cry.
And move to action.
And move to action. Yes, the kids were the motivators for recycling, for stopping smoking, for littering, wearing seatbelts, they're going to be the motivators that stop us from putting so much CO2 into the atmosphere and trying to reverse some of what's happened with climate change.
Do you have children?
No, I have a niece and nephew. I chose not to have kids because of population issues.
Wow, okay. Well, it's even more interesting. The reason I ask on air is because you're writing for children, so you obviously know children so well. It's really interesting to me. We were talking earlier about why people don't move to action and how people get overwhelmed. Talk a little bit about the syndrome that you've been talking about and using the motivated stories of these kids to help overcome.
It started when I started writing kids' books and then going around and speaking about the kids' books, which are all about environmental issues. I realized if I started just telling kids about the problems, that they got really kind of upset and they turned off. And so I started telling them success stories. And then as I traveled more around the country and the world, I started collecting more success stories. Like, for instance, kids have saved over 40,000 acres of rainforest by raising funds. So those kinds of stories empower people. They inspire people. So when I wrote a book with Gary Brosh, How We Know What We Know About Our Changing Climate, at first it focused on just the climate science. But at the end, we realized we had to tell these success stories. And it turned out that those were the most popular part of the book. So with this whole project, Young Voices for the Planet, we decided to just focus on the success stories. And now a lot of groups that teach about climate change use the movies before they even start teaching the science, because it opens up people to listen to the science if they know they can do something about it. And then just about a year ago, there was an article in the Journal of Social Psychology about motivated avoidance. And this was a huge study that basically substantiated what we already knew, but that it showed that when you tell people something that seems so traumatic and just intractable, that they are motivated to avoid hearing more about it. That's why they call it motivated avoidance. And it just means that they're going to shut down if you only give them the gloom and doom. And so the films are about success stories, and they're all replicable, and they're empowering and inspiring, and so that's what we really need to move forward.
So they show people how much they can do. For more information, you can go to Young Voices on climatechange.com. Young Voices for the Planet.com. Excuse me. Young Voices for the Planet.com, or you can find them at Young Voices on Climate Change. This is Joan Michelson with Green Connections Radio with Lynn Cherry of a massive collection of books for children on climate change that range from books for small children to books for teenagers. You can find us on the web at greenconnectionsradio.com. Find me on Facebook and Twitter at Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.